Hello, Squishers and Squishettes. This is Tasha reporting live from the Squish Nest with a little bit of another disclaimer. We fucked up again. It's fine. But we did record this podcast before we had fully realized that we need to listen to headphones while we record. So there are a couple moments where we didn't realize that the mics got really, really close to our face or really, really far away. So just keep your thumb close to the volume button, okay? For our audio stim sensitive friends, we love you so much for bearing with us, and we promise we've already recorded episodes after this that we nailed the audio, so it's a little cringe to put this out there, but we still think this episode has enough value and enlightenment I say humbly to share that we're still gonna put it out there for you guys. So thank you for listening to episode 2, and stick around as we share some advice for artists. Love you.
What were you saying before? You said something about trying a cover at the beginning of every episode.
It's the final squish down.
It's so funny. You had Whose Boots all day, but then your brain goes to that.
Whose bed has your squish been under? Man, I feel like squishing. Let's go, girls.
Let's go for a squish.
Welcome to Squish, the podcast.
Squeeze.
I'm your host, Tasha, and
Katie.
We are here today to talk about advice for young artists. Or, young doesn't mean age, though. Young could mean
advice for artists that just might help folks.
Yeah, it could help anyone.
Yeah. It can help anyone, because a lot of the stuff gives younger folks like a foot forward if they got into this stuff early on.
Yeah.
But saying that as someone who got into it later, like this year, some of it, and then I know that it would help anyone who, but like also just from the point of view of people who might feel like, oh, that's daunting, even though I am a adult artist, it's daunting. I feel like I am 10 years behind age-wise just because of life, and CPTSD and stuff. Stunts your growth. Stunts your growth more than coffee does.
Oh, I think keep you young.
Keeps you young.
Yikes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm like so deep in just still discovering who I am as an artist, and have discovered a lot of things. And the more you discover, the more you learn you don't know anything, and there's so much more to learn. But yeah, a couple of the things I've learned along the way have really proved to help, because I've put enough time into it that I've seen the difference before these things and after these things. I'm in no way an expert. And I also think that as an artist, you're discovering new versions of your artistry and your creativity throughout your whole life. And you go through like new waves of it. So I think you can take on new advice at any point, because you're always learning. That's the cool thing of creativity. You never stop figuring it out. It's like there's always new things. And I think that's the reason that we should try and absorb new advice and new opinions, is to push your creativity.
Yeah, you can always learn something. And from anyone, also, you can learn from someone who has been in the industry for 1 year, and you've been in the industry for decades.
Yeah.
And still learn something from them. You can learn things from all sorts of places.
It's actually a really good advice in the first place, is don't ever look down at people, look across at them.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Yeah, always.
We're all in it together.
Don't look down on anybody, and always collaboration over competition, because like just the energy it takes to feel like everyone's your competition and to feel like you have something to prove wastes a lot of time and energy.
Yep.
I've wasted lots of time feeling like I had to prove shit.
Yeah. And like, I feel like that's not saying don't be scared, because
no.
You should challenge yourself to try big, new, scary things, but don't make it scarier for yourself by assuming everyone's against you or seeing people that are against you and then being against them. You can break those habits yourself, and you can just be the person that is inclusive and that accepts everyone they see. And if people can't get on your level, then those aren't the people you work with.
Yeah, as much as you feel like you have to network with everybody in this industry, you don't. Like, you like be polite and be yourself, But like, you don't need to like invest energy into every single connection and acquaintance that you meet in the industry. Like, take the time to find out who like aligns with what you want and your morals and your like the path that you want for yourself as an artist.
Totally. It makes sense that there's like a bit of a desperateness to being any kind of artist, because in order to like make it, what people have quantified as making it, mm-hmm. takes so much effort, and mm-hmm. it feels like you need to take any opportunity you can. But I have really benefited from scaling down what my version of success as an artist is, yeah. to just being sought after within my community of peers for the skills that I have and for the creative skills that bring mm-hmm. me joy to do. So it's our people coming to me and asking me to do the things that I love, then I'm a successful artist.
Yeah.
That's what I would consider my version of success. And that's really helped it feel like I'm going to let things come to me a little bit more. I still want to pursue new opportunities, but I'm not hustling like I used to when I lived in Toronto or in a bigger city. And it's just feels endless. And then you're putting all that energy into maximizing your output rather than having something to say or like yeah. connecting to your craft at all.
Yeah. When here it can feel like, oh, you got to crack into these scenes that are so tight knit, or like you have to meet as many people as possible because the next step is to be big enough to do more off the island or whatever, or yeah. be big enough to leave. Some people just want to work their way up to be able to get out of here and make a go at a bigger city.
Yes.
And that's like a lot of it for a lot of people too. But, I've seen lots of people coming back and forth, and like people who have, I was just, you know, a buddy, but do you know Brett Smith Daniels?
I've heard that name.
He's a great guitarist. Mm-hmm. I went on Dragon's Den as a teenager for music. He's
go
like,
Brett.
Invest in me as a musician or whatever. There's a better story to it. But he was just recently posted something about the, in response to House of Owl looking for different workshop ideas and stuff. They wanted feedback about what kind of stuff they should offer. And he suggested this thing about the music ladder, like the industry ladder, and like yes. the momentum, because he's ping-ponged back and forth from playing these amazing opportunities on tours and going to studios in LA and like working with these really big name people, and then also like bouncing back and forth in gaps of time where he's like doing the cover band gig thing here and like doing like other things, or like at one point in his story he said washing dishes, like going back yeah. and forth, and like where you're like, oh, one minute I'm like doing this, and the next minute I'm here, and then the next minute I'm there, and then it's like taking all this time
yes.
to get to the point where now he feels like really solid about it, but had someone coached him through that ladder process and how to like how to use the momentum in your favor, like without burning yourself out.
I feel like the one thing you can guarantee about being an artist is it is inconsistent and it's yeah. fluid, but I feel like
that's why the pressure advantage. To say yes to everything yeah. is there. Because that inconsistency is there. So that yeah. pressure is, you feel like, if I say no to the things now, what I'm going to kick myself when they're not there.
I know.
But there's been so many seasons where I've been like, oh yeah, I'm just going to, things will naturally slow down in September, October, whatever. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
And then so I slowly forced myself to be like, no, these have to be my chill months. Like, these have to be the months that I write.
I like this ladder approach. Do you understand enough about that to like talk about it?
Basically, it's the whole thing of like how to take these opportunities and turn it into momentum that is a more sustainable, mm-hmm. like sustainable ongoing career process. But even though that's very difficult, and a lot of people, like a lot of people's goals is for them to be the front person. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And
that's what we've been told it looks like.
Yes.
Too.
And in music, a lot of the time, the most stable and sustainable income people are people who are doing the side man thing, doing the session
yeah. thing,
playing other people's music, doing the thing. They write amazing music themselves,
yep.
but they get hired a lot more to play other people's music. And that in itself is a great skill to have, like the people that yep. these guys have played with. It's crazy.
Yeah. Again, like not looking down at any opportunity.
Exactly.
It's like yeah. trying to find the golden nugget in it.
And I wouldn't look down on any of those opportunities, but it's the way that society has put it. Like the whole documentary is 20 Feet from Stardom, where it talks about all the backup singers who are legends in their own right, but a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Funk Brothers yeah. from Motown. They're yeah. like the core band of every single yeah. funk and Motown song that came
There's
out.
There's a lot of those where they're like, there were different like guitarists who are on every album when you look at their like credits. Or
I know.
Yeah, it's
so
it's
what are you
really
doing
crazy.
It for? And that's what I'm saying about what's your version of success is, are you doing it to have your name in lights? Or are you doing it to get paid to be an artist for the rest of your life? And for me,
I would like to sing.
I would love to sing for the rest of my life.
I just want to sing all the time. Yeah. I like singing. I like being in the studio doing other people's stuff. I like being in bands when I'm not in charge. I also like doing my own thing. But I definitely don't have the same background training that a lot of session people do. And there's a lot of music school network that works in your favor as you go to music school. There is connections and networks to that session gig pipeline where you just get, it's a straight pipeline from music school to session work. And a lot of the time they want certain skills, but I don't know. It just depends on what you want to do with your energy and your time. I get too much of a kick out of collaborating with other people to focus solely on what I feel like that's a blessing and a curse because I seek it so much that I forget to focus in on what my own goals
totally
are. Like at first I was just like, holy shit, this is happening.
In your own
I'm
music.
Having like a fun time. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And then I like looked up and it was 10 years later and so many things have happened and it's crazy. But now I'm like, oh, what do I really want to be doing? Mm-hmm. What do I want to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
What do I... Because I accidentally fell into a lot of great opportunities that like then became things I felt like I couldn't say no because I just feel like I got to do them.
Yeah, so it's the balance of it's make sure you're doing it for you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can look like collaborating and that can look like working with other people in their projects, but also make sure you're leaving space for you as a musician and you as an artist and doing the stuff that like really connects you to like the beautiful medicine that it is too.
Yeah. A funny thought is that codependency exists in a lot of relationships, including musical ones. So I've been very musically codependent where I'm learning now to play music by myself and try to like do things one step at a time with just my brain. And even then, I still hire a producer and I'm like, yo, Kurt, I need to word vomit some nonsense at you and let's figure it out.
Totally.
And then
such an abstract thing to do.
And just same with to help me with like certain parts that like I hate, like the back end of just releasing music and just, you know, getting over that hurdle of, oh, I forget how to do this. I haven't done this in so long. I was doing it with other people. So like, here's. Let's just give it, just put it out there.
Yeah, I feel like there are different brains in the art world and a lot of artists are not the put it all together to make sense brain. We are the, I have the ideas and I know what I want to say. I don't always know how I'm going to get it there or how I'm going to make it happen. And that's why people's brains who are logic bound and do have that really firm grasp on collecting all of the bits and pieces and making it into something cohesive are so wonderful. And if you're ever like stunted with what you want to say, I would really suggest putting energy into figuring out those skills. Figure out how to put all those pieces together. Take the time to do the work and understand what producing means and what managing means and what like, you know, doing all of the back end stuff means, because then you just become more well-versed as a person in the field.
But also you got to have grace with yourself and understand that if forcing yourself to figure out a certain part of it is going to stop you from doing it, then that's when you've realized that that is worth spending money on.
Yeah.
So for me, certain things like engineering, like aside from using this little R16 Zoom, which is great and user-friendly, like if I'm going to do anything overly complicated in the studio, I've been in the studio enough times now and worked with people who wanted to do whole bands themselves and it was a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I have learned that it is worthwhile to just pay an engineer because I can get in the studio and do what I do best and I'm not going to kill my creativity getting annoyed at certain things. And there are certain things where it's like there's a lot of artists with disabilities who feel like they can't even get their foot in the door because there's so much pressure to know how to do everything.
Yeah.
And you're limited in what executive function and mental capacity you have to begin with.
Yeah.
So I only look on a bad day. I will be able to like create the song. I will not be able to create and record the song because my brain hates me and will not work with the technology on a day like that.
No.
But I can create, like I can come up with ideas. I can do that. I can do this and that. I can host or whatever. But like doing the paperwork, that's got to be a good brain day. Like doing the grant writing was something where I was like, I'm so nervous about this. Like I fully was so stoked on the help from Mila to go through that process. And that's one piece of advice, my biggest piece of advice that I've learned from like this year myself is like I put off the grant thing for so long. And it wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that crazy. And I got into two different things that I never thought I would have gotten before. And it was a really cool process and like experience and still ongoing with the Fernwood one. And I still have the back end to tackle all the time.
Yeah.
But that's something that's one of my challenges where I'm like, all right, I'm going to get better at this part of things.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I feel it's so fair. If you want to be paid for your art, you have to pay for your art. If you want people to give you money for this one day, you need to be able to put in money to this one day. And that just goes for time, too. If you want people to sit down and have the time to listen, you got to sit down and put that time into making.
Yeah.
And you got to give it what you think it's worth as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a part of my brain that like can break into the creative flow really easily. And because I feel like it's easy, sometimes I don't push myself hard enough to make it really good. I'll make it good enough that it's entertaining, but I will struggle to push it like farther. And that's why collaborating is really good.
Same, yeah, because then you'll be like, okay, I'll take this and level it up. Like, I know that.
Yeah.
And that's where like my brain hears what it wants from. Okay, if I get together with this person and this person, then I'm going to get it to the place I want it to be. And that's the same thing of like, oh, that's me recognizing that like I don't have the skills to get it to where I want it to. But if I bring in certain people with the skills, then it will get to where I think it should be.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't make you any less of an artist. You're totally an artist, even if you just decide you just enjoy making the art for the sake of creating it. And if you're recording into the microphone on your laptop, into SoundCloud with no skills, and you're just doing it so that it exists, so that the people who close to you who love it and whatever, that it exists there for them someday. Those are all valid things. Like,
yes.
But there's no one way that you have to do it to be an artist. Like,
no. You just have to do it.
You just have to make the art. It doesn't ever have to see the light of day. It could just be for you. It could just be whatever.
Yeah.
You could be playing on this shittiest guitar with like this weathered and warped and whatever. I've seen amazing musicians play on some like broken children's guitars and make it sound beautiful. And it doesn't like always take money to make it happen, but you do. If you want to hit a certain space or do a certain thing when it comes to the arts, then it takes investing in yourself. And that doesn't mean that like you have to have come from money or be working some crazy job and making some insane amount of money to be able to afford these things.
No,
you just got to learn the avenues. There's options out there.
Could mean so many different things.
Yeah, right? Like investing the effort to apply for a grant so that the government pays the money. Like, where, you know, like it's not always, because I know a lot of people will be can hear things like that and be like, well, that's me out because I can't afford to like put money, because for a long time I was like, I don't have any extra money to put.
No, and most artists don't. But it is that thing too where it's you have to defeat the resistance within yourself. And that takes a daily kind of breaking it down, because I think we all start with this wall of like, okay, that's a mountain I have to climb and it's terrifying and I don't even know how to start. But if you start at that point, and you start ticking it away slowly and slowly, you are improving.
Yeah, you should do something.
There's a really good book called The War of Art. It's a deep spin on The Art of War. And it's this crazy man, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but it's like a daily entry thing. And it's just like his thoughts that day. And it's basically, he's like a militarized approach on how to defeat resistance. And he talks about it as literal war and hell in his mind every day. The resistance
sounds accurate.
Is trying to destroy me again, but I will not spite it. I will sit down and I will stare at this blank piece of paper because goddamn, I will not let it beat me today. And it's so aggressive because then it like validates, like it feels so hard sometimes. And it's, well, what if, yes, it is hard. And what if we've responded to that doubt and the fear and the resistance to it all as it deserves, which is aggressively sometimes. You really have to break that down. But then also he breaks it down into just one day at a time. And you are training that muscle to return to it and make it feel easier. And I totally think that the creative mind is a muscle just like any other. And it's almost like you got to go to the gym to work it out.
Yeah.
You got to train this part of you.
Yeah, and training your brain. If you've grown up building the neural pathways of like self-doubt and stuff, then you have to learn. You have to retrain those. That is a battle you got to fight.
Yeah. And I've done that in many different ways. And one of the tips that I was thinking of is you can go about that in big ways and small ways. And I don't think it needs to be one or the other. People are like, make like 100 things in 4 days.
Yeah, you know? I went gung-ho when I was younger. I ADHD taxed myself so hard where I just bought the things that I thought that I needed to like, that everyone else was using to like figure out how to use it. Okay, I've got Ableton, I'm gonna figure it out, blah, 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 blah. And then as soon as I would hit these walls of frustration because I'm just not a person who
gets... We're trying to tackle it all at once.
That too, but I know that recording software can be the bane of my existence. So now, I wish I learned this a long time ago, just like use an analog tool.
Yeah.
Like this, the R16 Zoom makes my life easier because I can just record the pieces I need of me and then take it to someone else who can edit it properly, can mix and master it properly or whatever.
Scaling down.
Yeah, scale. And just, it's like learning anything else. If you know that you learn differently, then you have to apply that to music too. Like the road that everyone takes might not be the road that makes the best sense for you. Because I tried so hard to force myself so many times to figure it out the way that it looked like everyone else was doing it and the way that made sense how everyone else was doing it.
And like, then I was that's just not like, how my brain works.
It just kept resetting me back to zero. Like I would just get to a certain point and then a project would fall apart. I would have to start over or whatever. Yeah. And so then it was like, oh, okay, I'm not doing this in a way that works for me in my brain. I'm forcing myself to try to do it in the way that I think I'm supposed to.
And letting yourself acknowledge the way you're doing it isn't working instead of just sitting in that failure spiral. I mean, music's not for me.
Yeah. I suck at this part or whatever.
Just like, way.
It's really easy to get into that frustrated space. And like, especially if frustration is a trigger for you, if you're like neurodivergent or if you're dealing with stuff where that's a thing that will ruin your creative zone. Creativity is a hard thing. Sometimes it needs to be nurtured. And sometimes trying to do every facet of it doesn't nurture it. And you're like, oh, I have to be my own promotion, my own management, my own studio, my own engineer, my own everything.
Okay, that's enough talking. Welcome to Have You Heard, the part of the podcast where we give you guys a little bit of a break from Katie and I's chatterboxing, and we highlight a little bit of local music. Okay, we're going to give you a little musical reprieve in the middle of our episode here to just space things out a little bit. So the first thing that I wanted to share in the first ever Have You Heard is this playlist put together by my partner, Isaac, called Victoria BC Sampler. Now, this is going to be linked in the show notes, and it's on Spotify, and it's got 122 local songs by local artists that are amazing, and I highly suggest that you check it out. And today what we're going to do is we're going to play the first song off the playlist, which is by none other than our wonderful friend Wes Carroll, by his group Wes Carroll Confabulations. We're going to play the first 30 seconds of the song so that we don't, you know, bust anyone's copyright issues, but just give you a little bit of a taste of all the local insane talent that we've got going on here. So without further ado, here's Put It On by Wes Carroll.
Well, spinning got you 12 round. Silhouette into a slow bow. Muscle bounce starts to unfurl now. As you sit more like a string bean. Smell that scene, it ain't a nasty place. Body's breathing is a laughing face. Feeling free, but in a fancy way. Dance today, or trying on a different style. Yeah, but you did it.
Yeah, he did that. He did that. Wes, he do that. That's his thing. Okay? I know that was just such a teaser. I know. It hurts to only show you that much, but we don't want to bust anyone's bubble. We're not a radio show. I don't think we have license to share full songs, and if we do, we'll figure it out one day. But yeah, thank you for coming to the first ever Have You Heard? Back to the show.
Something that's really helped me align with the decision-making of what projects I do and why is just trying to find the joy in the project that I'm doing. So if I'm trying to do something that's pretty intimidating and it's some big girl shit, it's okay, let's try not to think about it as like the scary thing. Where is the joy I can find in this project? And like, how do I let this like task actually spark joy? So it's like,
that's why you theme things, clowns and proms and shit.
I fucking love themes. And I love,
oh, I'll just make it a fun clowny time.
Yeah, or make it a self-exploration of figuring out how to do this. Or I'm an aesthetic person who likes to build the visual component to things, but that does make me come back to it. Having something look good or feel good means I'm going to return to it. The more I just treat something like it's a scary kind of unknown, then I'm going to not fuck with it, because most of the art we're doing is on our free time, and not many of us have much free time because we're all hustling out here. So it has to be joyful, and I think that's the only thing that should be consistent. Like your the way that we challenge ourselves can be big, it can be small. Sometimes we really need that push to really break through into this new level or new layer, and sometimes we just need to like write something every day or do something really small that feels achievable. But none of it's gonna be achieved if it's joyless. And yeah, that joyfulness and just like feeling delighted with what you're doing is so key. And I found
it's a good mental check-in to be like, oh, I'm losing the joy, where do I find it?
Yeah,
when you're getting frustrated along the way.
Yeah, and it's good to challenge yourself, not just immediately be like, this isn't joyful, because a lot of hard things aren't always joyful. But if you can like, it's supposed to be play, like playing music. We are supposed to be connecting with our inner child here, and it has to feel like safe space. And that's where the real true voices come out, is when you create that really safe container for your real vulnerable self. But then there's another flip head to that coin. Something that I wrote too is, you don't actually let yourself get too comfortable. So I need to be joyful. I need to enjoy and find delight in what I'm doing. But I also don't want to let myself get too comfortable, where I stop pushing myself and I run out of things to say. If you slow down and get into this state of passivity, then I actually lose my spark a little bit too. And I think people have the most to say, unfortunately, when we're going through big change, and that doesn't always have to be negative change, but I'm like a real big advocate on keep your life in motion and creative spirit will come through you, but you need to kind of keep moving in a way that's, it's challenging you. That doesn't mean to seek out traumatic shit, though. But there's like a balance of, yeah, don't let yourself get too, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like the stagnant feeling that can come sometimes if you're not staying inspired. But I also feel like sometimes it can be hard to decipher what that means for yourself, because sometimes we can push ourselves to a state of burnout, and then you also don't have the energy to create. So it's like a fine line, I feel like, because so there's the creation that happens if I'm like around people, just like getting inspired, doing funky stuff in big groups and whatever, and constantly staying busy and whatnot. But I've realized, especially too, forcing myself to slow down and take time with myself to write more lately, especially like partly it was like trying to process new grief and stuff and go through these journal prompts and whatever and like
all the healing of this.
But it was also helpful for being able to create music that my brain needs a certain amount of slow, relaxed space for that to come out. Because I need to slow down enough to just sit with my instrument and fuck around.
But are you still able, even in that slow space, to access, I feel like it's the curiosity of like, you're not in the same thought pattern. So it's like the discomfort or like the stagnant thought process is really what I'm talking about, more than like the environment you're in, because like
getting stuck in a stagnant cycle of thought.
Yeah, and not challenging yourself to think outside your little tiny comfort box that we hide ourselves in.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that's definitely a problem. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
I
get stuck in that.
Heard an interview with Josh Brolin the other day, and he says that every time he goes on a trip with his family, he makes them stay in the worst hotel he can find and the worst motel he can find, because his biggest fear is living too comfortably, because he doesn't think that it would challenge his kids enough to like
find. If you want to challenge your kids with bed bugs and whatever, that's your call, man. But I've seen some gross hotel rooms. I don't know if I would do that.
But also to be able to make the best of those situations rather than the opposite of, you've been given everything and then in that you're going to find the worst of every situation.
So totally. Like, I get the analogy I get the purpose of it, but I definitely think there's better ways than the hotel room, I think. There's like better things you could do than the hotel room one.
That's where this thought
That's a really funny way to do that, though. There are interesting ways I feel like you could challenge your kids to think outside the box that is a little more growth inspiring than a dirty hotel room, but I get what you're saying. But yeah, I do agree, because like all of my craziest things happened when I threw myself into discomfort and threw myself out of my comfort zone and tried new things. Like all of the bands that I had been in, a lot of them, there were times where I would have never thought that I could just leap in and do something like that. And now I have a different comfort zone than I did before. Mm-hmm. Doing the Blasé set at Fernfest with one rehearsal is something that I would not necessarily have had a comfort zone 4 years ago, but I trust myself to do now. That's from those moments of pushing myself out of that comfort zone. And just same with the grant thing. Like I was terrified of writing the grant. And then when we got it, I was terrified of fucking it up or like doing it badly or whatever. Like I still am like, oh gosh, like I gotta make sure this is really good. And yeah, and part of doing this with you, I'm like, all right, there's some skills in here that I can like better sharpen my abilities on. And
yeah, the higher the stakes of anything, the more you have to lose. So the pressure increases. But I do think telling yourself and reminding yourself or like putting in a practice that helps you know this fact of you are worth and your artistry and what you have to say and like your voice as an artist is worth this higher stake really helps. That's how I've gotten over like being like any kind of stage fright is just, no, I belong here. Like I'm able to hear, and that comes from a great place of privilege as well. Whereas a lot of people have to fight probably 800 times as hard as I did to be welcomed into, you know, all these spaces. But I do think just like that inner narrative, you do actually have control over. And I think this was something I was telling you the other day of, I saw a video and it was just like, you've been convincing yourself that everyone hates you for so long. Do you know, you could just like also convince yourself that everyone likes you and that you're fine. It's like you have as much control over this negative thought as you do the positive thought. If what if you just told yourself that you deserve to be up on that stage? You deserve to say what you need to say. And now more than ever, we need people to believe in themselves, because a lot of our systems make it extremely hard to and incredibly impossible to feel like being an artist is a valid way of life. And in comparison to what I said about like, you have to scale down in some ways, you also have to scale yourself up. And if we want to continue being able to make a living as an artist, we have to tell ourselves that it's possible. Constantly telling yourself it's impossible, there's no point, there's no use.
Yeah.
I know, it's self-protection.
But it's also not, it's also something that's very true. And it's something that like is, for a lot of people, is easier said than done. And that's just like, I want to acknowledge that. Because there's, you know, a whole lot of folks that have gone through similar things that I've gone through that might be in a state where I was and like am sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not linear. Mm-hmm. Where, like, something like that, you just be like, oh, yeah, easy for whoever to say. Some people are born in or living life with this default setting of hearing something like that is just inspiration. And you're like, oh, okay, light bulb. I'm just going to tell myself that I belong here and believe in myself, and I'm just gonna do that. Yeah. Okay, that's what we're doing now. And then there's other people where, like, in order to take that seriously, you have to first unlearn a bunch of bullshit. Mm. So it's like when you've grown up, like, doing these, your environment around you creates these pathways in your brain that are there. Like, you have to then undo them. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I just wanna acknowledge that while I agree, it's definitely an important thing to do. Self-talk is huge. I work on it all of the time with myself. I go up and down.
We always do.
But it is something that is not an easy thing for a whole lot of people. If like,
it's a reminder to work on it at all, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's something like, work on it, but don't feel bad if it doesn't come instantaneously to you the way it does to other people, is all I'm saying. Because like, it's something that like is a slow process, and it's none of that. Growth isn't linear. Like, we don't. Grief and growth and the biggest, heaviest things that like our society makes us feel like you just have to do this and this and then you're good and grown and then you're fine and then you're healed. And paradox. No, that's not.
Yeah. And this is the paradox too of trying to give advice. It's like, it's no one thing works for anyone.
That's why it's great that we have different perspectives. Like, you come from a different upbringing than I do.
Yeah.
You have similarities, some differences. We have an age gap. There's lots of different experiences going on
totally.
Here.
Getting something from the experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I'm definitely someone who constantly is, I don't know shit. Like, I'm not an expert. Yeah. I don't know, fuck all. All I can do is share my experience and, like, what it's done for me and, like, how I've learned from it.
I learned something cool today that what you just shared, you said we're unlearning so much. I heard this, so I was listening to this podcast. It's called We Can Do Hard Things, and I highly suggest it. It's wonderful. And they were talking about in a relationship, and I'm going to compare this to, like, your relationship with your artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to unknow our partner, because the second you assume you know everything about someone or something, you stop trying to learn more. Like, the second we're just like, oh, this person has these needs, these wants, these things, we stop checking in with them. We stop asking them what those things are, and that curiosity disappears. And I feel like we could use that about our artistry, where it's like, I want to continuously assume that I know nothing about the art that I could make, because then that's like a world of opportunity. And it's the opposite of, I've made so much and there's nothing else to say.
That's exactly, that's, well, and I have gone at music with that mentality, because, like, I came in it being like, I don't know shit.
Yeah.
I have an ear for music and a voice that I was blessed with, just having this weird emotional connection to singing from a young age. People always told me I had a nice voice, and then it was just like, okay, figure it out. And I just constantly went at it with, I don't know anything. I'm just here to try to learn and have fun singing and hope for the best. And then the downside of that is then when, like, 10, whatever, however many years later, people assume I know a lot of things based on, like, my performance ability or whatever.
You know something.
But yeah, but I don't know. I know a bunch of things for sure, but I think it's definitely curiosity and that desire to learn, whether it's like a new thing, a new skill, a new person, a new communication ability, like, that is like that's like the true fountain of youth, is like, you got, like, having things to be inspired by or driven towards.
We're human beings, and I love the idea and the concept that our core need is to nurture each other and to share our stories, and that's how we learn, that's how we've evolved, and that's how we connect to each other, and that's how we grow. And it's, we not only need to nurture these stories externally, we need to nurture them internally. And I like to treat my creativity like I have a relationship with it. It is something that needs to be nurtured and cared for, like a human relationship that's outside of me as well. And I just love to think that, like, we're all naturally programmed for nurturing and taking care. And, like, we do all have that compassion within us. And to put that towards something that's so, like, joyful and fulfilling is a really nice thought. But it's also hard work.
Yeah.
Because we all, you know, struggle to make time for things. Or, like, we've opened everything, every challenge that we brought up in the last, like, few minutes in our chat are real things that everyone has to tackle daily, and then still try and find the joy and the curiosity under all that bullshit.
I can't remember where, it's been all over the internet, multiple ways and variations of being said, but the thing where it's, talk to yourself like you would talk about your best friend or whatever. It's just, for some people, you've internalized your artistry so much that every note you might fuck up is a failure on yourself. Like, I know, I watch people be like that. And I remember being like that when I first came at it. And especially improvising and stuff, like, I wanted every note or everything that fell out of my mouth to fall right. And that sometimes would even cause hesitation to open your mouth at all. But the way that I encourage other people to enter the improv circle is so different than, it's how I wish I had talked to myself back in the day. But it does help, I think, to visualize that part of yourself, the artist, of creative part of yourself, or, like, even in other parts of life where you're, like, the part of yourself that needs the version of you that you didn't have growing up or whatever they say.
Yeah.
Like, make it a physical other person so that it's easier for you to, like, make it in your mind another person so that you can, like, treat it as if it's outside yourself, so you can give it the care that you'd give other people, because we're so much better at caring for others than we are for ourselves.
And it was something that you just said about, like, how we speak to ourselves actually helped me reflect a little bit as to what I said earlier about when I'm, like, prepping to go on stage or, like, into an environment where I'm going to perform. I'm, like, telling myself, yes, I belong up there, whatever. But what I really, like, find helps the most actually is just, I'm going to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm I'm going to play and it's going to be silly old time.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a silly old time. And just break
you at Otherworld was like the most like playful, silly, like hilarious version.
I was so...
You were channeling a whole other, like, I was like, this is amazing. I was so there for it.
It was the safest
the
I've ever
dancing,
felt.
The dancing, there was like the shuffling off of some coat or something. Like, there was like so many moments where I was like, oh my God.
Oh, thank you.
So
well,
good.
It's because the cool crowd was just like you guys. It was family.
So flash of you just dancing on stage in that. In the edit.
Oh my God. Yeah, oh, it was definitely.
It was so good.
On something that night, and I had to.
And so, and you all, that was a great set. And I don't care what anybody says, because I know some of the guys are harder on themselves or others. Like, but like, no matter what any of you say, that was a great set. And
because
the funny
we were
part
fun.
Is you were having fun, but right before that, everyone was a little bit tense.
You tell the story.
You, I mean, like, people just had like headaches and weren't feeling good or whatever.
I was having like, a lot more than I had. Why don't
you? But, you were having an existential crisis and a craving for broth.
I feel like
Braden had migraine.
I want to tell a story because it's a hilarious story. But basically, yeah. I thought that I was going to have a little microdose of mushrooms at about 3 p.m. Yeah. And we had a set at 9 p.m. at a music festival in front of all of our friends. And it was
hot all day, too.
It was fucking
we were running
hot.
Around.
I took way more than a microdose. I had my biggest mushroom trip of the year that day. And I...
Oh, yeah. Your micro was like an accidental macro.
I took a macro... And I was not expecting it. And I just realized that I had to go into this trip being like, okay, baby, I have to be on stage in 4 hours and I have to do an entire set with my band and I cannot disappear too far. I'm going to disappear a little bit. I'm going to go into this thing. But I just had to trust it and it was terrifying. But I went into this beautiful journey where I just stayed at camp the whole day. I didn't fucking leave.
I know. We were all in that cuddle pile. You were drinking broth and I was helping Braden with his headache.
But
and that was like...
that, even, I had the bongos. And that
I remember. I came by and you were just in the zone. Just, I was like, you were on it. And you were elevated to another planet. Just head down, bongoing it up. You had a thing dangling in front of you, too, that you were very
cloud.
Enamored by. It was, yeah, it was
a cloud on my head.
Yes.
And I was wearing rainbow clothes. And then my legs were like... this yellow pants. So I felt like I was God.
That's the moment I entered the camp that then sucked me in for the afternoon and I didn't leave for a good chunk of that day.
It was this wild moment where everyone else was kind of on something and they were all cuddling over there and I was like, I can't fuck with anyone but this bongo right now. So I was just like playing the bongos and everyone was just listening to me and I felt like I was like orchestrating the rhythm of the cuddle puddle. Because as I'd speed up, I'd see people start to talk really louder and just get like really excited. And then I'd slow down and then I'll be like relaxing. And then I was like, am I God? I was having this like total ego complex thing. And then I had this like crazy vision.
Your
where
bongos and Samsara's giggle.
Yeah.
Burned in my brain.
And then I was just like, okay, there's two other things. The vision was that we had run out of water at the camp at some point. And it was fucking hot and there's no more water. And I was like, uh-oh. We cut down all the trees and now there's no more water and the world is burning up. And I went to this like deep, dark place of like climate change.
That's dark, but also a little bit funny considering where you were camped, the water refill
the
was like
the
right
station.
There.
But it was empty. That's
oh,
what
that
I'm
was
saying.
Empty. Oh.
We like were out of water and my like crooked mind was like, okay. But I was like, yeah, the last few trees that we had, we cut down to make these bongos.
Meanwhile,
and now
we're surrounded by trees.
We're just these last few monkeys just playing these drums into oblivion because we don't have nothing else to. And eventually I did get broth in me and I had lots of cuddles, but I was like, okay, this is not going to be my best set. I am not going to like be in performance mode and I just have to accept that. And I just told myself it was going
none
to
of
be
y'all
fun.
Looked like you were, but I know so many people who, like I've seen... I've had a bandmate who was like ill and was like just KO'd, came, did the set, disappeared and KO'd again. And because you do what you got to do sometimes. So I knew that to an extent it was still going to come out. But like the performance level that happened was just like so fun and silly and not what I expected from the state y'all were in right before.
But there was something nice there too where I feel like had to accept that it wasn't going to be like this amazing thing that we wanted to. And then also recognize that we were in an environment that wasn't holding us to that pre-existing like standard.
No,
this
man.
This is an environment where everyone's
about
fucking
that stage
chilling
too,
and having
like,
fun.
The people who are there are fucking stoked for any live music
any
because
live music.
There's so much electronic.
The moral for my story is don't take more mushrooms than you think you need to take before.
That's just good drug advice in general.
It's just don't take big
do more
risks.
Than you think
like,
you need
to.
Don't
cut your hair before an event that matters
micro,
to you.
Micro.
Just don't take that risk unless you're willing to accept.
I've cut my hair and clothes right before an event. I'm the worst for that. But.
And we get into that state where you're trying to fix the anxiety, but it's really, you have to be willing, if you're willing to accept your set not going the way you want to, then go for it. But I've found relying on substances or a state of mind to perform well is never the vibe. I've never really felt that way.
Welcome back to Have You Heard? Okay, we're going to give you guys a little bit more musical talent today. Based in Victoria, BC, but originally from Quebec, is our lovely friend and previous roommate, Ben LeClaire, who is under the name Mi Moon Mir on Spotify. And I'm going to play you a song today that he wrote, features both myself and my lovely partner Isaac on bass clarinet on this song, and it's called Pretty Water. It was a song that Ben would be playing a lot in the living room while we were all living together, and I just couldn't help but harmonize with him, and then he let me feature on the song. So love you, Ben. I also got to design the album artwork, which was a total delight. Okay, so without further ado, here's 30 sweet seconds of Pretty Water by Mi Moon Mir featuring Isaac and Tasha.
Dusting on the coins in your wishing well. Dusting all my coins in your wishing well.
There you have it. Not enough time. Way not enough time. But you know what? We're figuring it out. Okay, guys? Ben is awesome. We're going to link that song in the show notes as well. And we hope that you can go listen to the full song on Spotify. Okay? Love you. Thanks for listening to Have You Heard? Back to the show.
And then another thing is,
it's a good chance any state you're in, your set is not going to go the way that you expect it to any of the times.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that can, yeah, just go in there with the thought of having fun.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of the time too, like playing music live is a really cool fucking experience, and it's a blessing and it's a privilege that a lot of people like never in their lifetime get the opportunity to play in front of audiences.
No.
And sometimes I literally kick myself at how many of us will miss that feeling because we're critiquing ourselves immediately. We're critiquing ourselves during the moment while it's happening. Numbing. Where like I'm not in the numbing train these days anymore. I can't really party like I used to. But I definitely will like over critique myself, and I see a lot of friends doing it too.
Yeah, the second they got off stage,
and you're like, wait, this cool fucking memory just happened. This is a memory, these core memories. I look back now too at like things I critiqued, even like critiquing the way I looked in photos or like what I wore because I was worried about hiding parts of my body or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, like this was a memory where I look back at this photo and think how much time I spent and in thought about how hot I was in the extra layers when I could have just taken it off and no one would have cared, or like where I was like worried about how Danny and I were even listening back to recordings Jonesy had recently, and we were both like, we sound better than we thought we did. Like at that time, we were critiquing ourselves so much harsher than we do now.
Just the act of like making art in any way is so fucking awesome. Even if it's bad, you are playing. It is playful. You're playing with the spirit of life, and you're doing a thing that no other species on this planet gets to do, which is doing something purely for joy. There's no actual biological need to make art. There's no actual function for it. It's just something you get to do celebratorily, and it's fun.
Well, in my case, that was the drive to art, was a biological function. for me, like, making music helped me move, like, really shitty energy out of my body.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, it was, like, I discovered singing because, like, I didn't understand why I was sad. Like, I couldn't, I was too young to, like, have the words to figure out what the sadness was that I was feeling. And then I found, like, soul-singing, powerful Black women singers. And I started emulating these sounds and these voices and singing these songs. And was, because I was like, oh, that's pain. That's what they do with their pain.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm going to try that. And then I was like, oh, okay. This, so for a long time, I didn't care about singing anywhere outside of my basement. Mm-hmm. Because for me, singing was just a biological function to deal with this nervous energy, to deal with. It was also a stimming thing when not knowing you're neurodivergent. You're just like all this balled up energy from masking all day and like sitting still and whatever
That's
else.
Like, I feel like another element of the magic to it
music
too.
Music is a realm where you're allowed not to sit still.
Yeah, and just like creating and letting yourself tap into that is like something so magical that we shouldn't hold ourselves back from. Yeah. Embrace it. Take it all in. Let yourself have that opportunity. Your self, future self will thank you.
Like, we've given a lot of like abstract like self-improvement advice along this without like with like a couple practical things dabbled in there. What my rapid fire thing is that check out the grants that apply to you. Find out which ones you need to have a nonprofit sponsorship with to apply for, and find out which ones you can apply for as an individual person. Find out when their deadlines are and keep track of it however you can, as best you can. And like, just pick one that seems easy and go for it if that's one of the things that stresses you out. And like, they have the info sessions, but then they also usually have an independent meeting with the person.
Mm-hmm.
Do all those things. And if you're someone who has a disability, they usually have a realm in there where it's like they will offer support for folks to apply for the grant, like there's support for the application process itself.
Awesome.
And then just hack it off one bit at a time. And that's my biggest advice, is just learn what the grants are. Like, just learn what's out there and learn what they are. Because, like, I took so long thinking that you had to be more established or have more to show for your art for them to say yes to you or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's always, no matter what you do or how long you do it, you're always going to feel like you need to do more before someone will value it. But just try.
And if you're not in a space where you can try, because it does feel too big and far off, or you don't have an idea that you would want a grant for, spend time around people who are getting the grants. Mm-hmm. Because they will talk about it.
Ideally, or just like do the info session anyway.
And do the info session. That's like kind of what I'm saying too. It's just spend the time around people who have figured that out, because they'll help you really just feel like it's so much more accessible than you think it is. And that's the only reason I've been wanting to create a non-for-profit, is because I just sat around some people that are like, oh yeah, all you have to do is X, Y, Z. And I'm like, what?
And that's the thing. A lot of the grants, like there's a bunch more grants available when you are a non-for-profit.
Yeah.
Like mine, I had to be sponsored by Fernwood to do it, because it's more having the backing of a non-for-profit is helpful.
Yeah. That's the whole reason I'm doing it, is because instead of searching one out, it's like I'm already doing the work that's like creating money that goes back into my community. So that's what a non-for-profit is. So it's just, it's not only valuing yourself enough, it's like understanding, doing the little bit of reading and valuing to understand ways that our systems.
Yeah, investing in yourself can also just be time learning. Like you're saying, reading the things and doing the things. Like, doesn't always be have to be monetarily. Sometimes it's just about sitting down and learning what it takes to build your nonprofit.
And there's no better feeling than reading a grant and being like, oh, there are systems in place to support the work I'm already doing. Because that's just like the biggest lift of imposter syndrome I've ever had. Is, oh, I'm already doing the work that is valued as such. And it's, wow, that made me feel so much more accomplished already versus this like giant pedestal I thought I had to get to before legitimizing myself as like successful again.
Yeah, I often don't give myself credit for things either, where like other people will do and will point it out to me, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I guess I do have enough under my belt to be like, oh yeah, like people should let me do this or whatever. Yeah. People should have faith in me to do this, or
it's like
whatever.
Curiosity about yourself, but also surrounding yourself with curious people who like ask you questions about your art and
people
to
who
learn
support
about
you,
because that will help. Yeah, people who support you and people who want to like understand the way you work will encourage you to do that within yourself as well. And again, just like coming at it all from this level of, I don't want to ever know everything.
No, I honestly think that's when you die. I feel like when you have nothing left to learn, then you're dead.
Then you
did. Because I don't know. I feel like there's you gotta. I don't know. There's learning and new experiences are the juice of life. I get so much out of it every time.
I think that's what I was saying about don't get too comfortable. Let's try and find ways of keeping yourself in that fluid state of what life is. Like, life is that fluid state. Another practical fact that I put in the notebook was where you live matters.
Sure.
We all out here struggling to manage a living situation that is comfortable. It is really hard. It is very difficult.
I'm hard time with that.
But, and we all, I mean, I have done this, accepted a living state that might not be perfect, but it's cheap, it's affordable, it's doing the bare minimum. But that affects your art. It affects your creative spirit so much. And you want to be in a space where you have space to create. Because the second that's not in your home, it's like you have to find this like alternative third space to make art. That's so much more resistance to doing
that. It's true. I've been through that this year. Like, that's why I like impulsively took over Ollie's room for while he was gone. Because I just needed a space to make art. And that was the flexibility where it's like I could stay here or at my house. It's not a place I have to leave at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But like, I went from having a big space to play around with to like being in this small basement suite, which I know that I can make it work. But the problem is like, rearranging and refitting it is just things that just has not been in my budget. Like, I've been making it work with whatever I have, but the space itself needs things that work in that space if I'm not gonna leave that space. So I'm like struggling, but at the same, and it's so funny to think back of, oh, I have like more time now to do the things, and I have like no one stopping me. Like, I live alone technically. There's people above me, but that's, you know, but some of my most creative times were in chaotic houses with so many people, and never knew what was going to happen next or whatever, because their creativity rubs off. Like, you get into doing shenanigans together. Like, I don't know, there's
like
so much
submitting, or like you're like succumbing to the flow of it too. You're like letting yourself be in the flow of the art as well, which I find really valuable. But even just like for your own art, it is important to have your own space. I've lived in 15 homes in the last decade, and there have been some that really hindered my creative energy and some that really supported it. And it's totally been, who I'm surrounded by really matters, but also just having the physical space to be like, that is a creative space, and almost like an altar, like treating it like it's the sacred thing that needs to be nurtured and needs to be like invested in. It's like that's a version of investing in your art. It's like giving yourself a like space to do it that's not just like your couch, because your couch has so much other energy in it. Or, you know, it's a privilege, but if I could have half the amount of couch and then have a little nook that's for my creativity, I will make more shit. And it's really hard because
that's what
we're
I'm
all
thinking
about this housing crisis.
I'm like, oh, how do I create? How do I? To what space in this tiny space do I dedicate to?
It's just letting your creativity have the space it deserves, and like investing in it in energetic ways.
That's the thing too, and having the energy. I feel like something happened this season, from even just from summer to now, because I used to just get in a kick. I would transform the entire room and it'd be like, sweet, this is the creative vibe right now. And I just like that fire usually would come regularly. And then like after this last window of craziness at the end of this summer, I'm like, where is that energy? I need one of those good manic rearranging sessions.
The space that your physical body in, and the things, actually my friend Kiara, she told me this term called imaginal hygiene, which sounds hilarious, but it's your brain coochie, keep her clean. If you are like only taking in negative imagery, or you're only taking like in like stagnant bullshit, whatever you're taking in, if it's not visually pleasing or like somehow creatively inspiring to you, it's going to affect your ability to imagine. You're only going to have the like things around you to use as inspiration. So it's like you actually have to give yourself this like dose of like things that bring you like stimulus and joy and inspiration and freshen it up sometimes.
But I think I'm realizing it as you're saying that like part of what happened is I kept taking down all of my fun fabric things and whatnot. Not giving them to you, using them for those. I have so many that those are just ones I didn't need, but using them for Skafest, Green Lounge, Skafest Volunteer Lounge, and then events, like a few events. Things happened in a row where there was a few things in a row that happened. And then I was like, oh, I got to think about getting a new bed. And then I went to Ontario and all. So it was just like a series of things where I basically stripped the vibe of the place out and took it down to bones. And then I was like, oh, I got to like seasonal clean anyway, cobwebs, whatever. So I like cleaned up and dusted and everything. And then I never put anything back up because I was like, oh, I'm going to do something different, or I'm going to get the bed first or whatever. And now I'm like,
your creative juice externally, not from your home.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Matters.
And I would just, I just haven't got hit with one of those modes of like, oh, I'm going to transform and do a weird thing in here and decorate it up again.
Now you know.
Yeah.
And it happens in cycles too. Like, we'll prioritize our space for just living mostly.
I finally ordered a new bed frame, so I'm hoping that will inspire another manic redecoration.
Hell yeah. Because you're going to have to move things. But yeah, that's most of the tips that I can think of for where I am presently in my moment. It's just like finding the joy, staying curious. Don't let yourself know everything, but try and know as much as you can.
And if your house doesn't work for you to get creative, go out and charge your creativity elsewhere. Because that was a big thing for me, is like taking myself on little artist dates and like coming out to, that's part of why I was like coming out more to different things like Dunhouse or like whatever, like just coming to check out different spaces and different vibes to be inspired by, or to just take my stuff to the beach or
Or a cafe, sitting
nest
in a cafe.
In the car.
And investing in your local community spaces so that those spaces can continue to exist, because we are losing them by the minute.
It's crazy.
That's a whole other conversation.
The city is talking to Quadratic. They're in talks to see if there's something they can do with the bylaw nonsense. My faith is low when it comes to bylaw nonsense, because I also spoke to the city when there was bylaw stuff and it didn't really do anything.
I wrote in the notes, access needs.
Knowing your access needs, like, and learning how to communicate them with the people you play music with and stuff too. Because a lot of the times knowing now that I'm neurodivergent and looking back at projects where I kicked myself after the fact and thought, how could I have done that better? How could I have been a better band leader? How could I have been a better person to work with, like, in that scenario, and realizing that it was because, like, I was unaware of my own access needs and some of my limitations that, like, I thought I just had to push past, but in trying to push past those, fit a mold I thought I had to fit and please, aiming to please everyone at the same time without really reflecting on what the goal was, that was, like, a dangerous, like, combo for me.
I really like that.
Yeah. Like, so like, I really had to, like, now looking back, I would have communicated differently with like where my limits were around like organizing recording sessions or like certain things where I like would have reached out for more help from other bandmates and like whatever, but feeling like it had to be like me keeping it interesting and booking gigs or making things happen or like whatever, like, you know, constantly being worried that if I didn't do this, person would lose interest, and if I didn't do that, this person would lose interest in being in the project or whatever. So there's like those things, like think about what you want something to be and like know what your needs are to get it there.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to ask the people that you're working with in a project to take on the parts that you struggle with.
Yeah.
And then also communicate like where you can pick up slack as well.
I also really like just how that's taking responsibility for like the role you play in collaboration, because if you want to make awesome collaborative art with other musicians, that does require a decent amount of responsibility.
Oh yeah.
Because they are also trusting you with that space of creativity.
Totally.
And knowing what like your strengths are and also knowing what your weaknesses are and being okay to like, you know, sometimes take the lead, also sometimes take it back and just be like, okay, cool. This is our project. We are all working on it together. And making sure that the playfulness and the lightness stays intact, because the second it gets hard and heavy, and that can happen in so many different ways.
Yeah. And I think in my case, my downfall was that I was too much in that zone, and I did it because I was like so concerned with making sure like people wanted to be there and were happy to be there, and that like they had what they needed to make them want to be there. And also being so focused on this is our project, this is a thing that like I forgot to take the initiative to like lead when I needed to. And also coming from a situation where like we were in a big project that like there was one leader who just burnt a lot of bridges. So I was really afraid to be like a bad band leader.
Yeah.
So I went too far in the realm of trying to give every person in the project a bit of whatever, what they wanted to do, figure out how to make it enticing for them to want to stay in the project. And then also, and then, but in the, you, because you can't keep everyone happy, you like will drop the ball somewhere.
Yeah.
And so like in some cases, like I feel like I like for me, I felt like I put too much pressure on feeling like if we didn't have shows booked, then that people wouldn't have enough motivation to keep coming back.
Yeah.
And if also just because they're good players, I was like, if we don't have gigs booked, they're going to book gigs with other people. So it was like my pressure was on like having gigs instead of making sure we like got in the studio or whatever. Like there's lots of things where I'm like, oh, I could have like I could all day on how I could do things better. It's one of those things we learn.
Band etiquette is like a whole thing in itself, right? Because there's so many roles that do need to be fulfilled in a band. There does need to be different roles. Yeah. Not everyone can be doing the same thing. And they're like,
and you got to communicate. It's hard. One of those things I've struggled with communicating without emotion getting in the way, because communicating when a lot of the times growing up, like communicating backfired on me. So like it took a lot of extra work to learn how to communicate with people, especially when it was hard topics.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, now that I know that, I know I could handle it better. But back then it was like the topics of conversation, you're like, oh, I don't want to.
And something that I've run into a lot is I will be that person that tries to book the shows. I also run the social media. I also make our logos. I design the merch. I take all the photos, or I hire the photographer. I do all that fucking shit as well, because I want people to be inspired by the project, and I want people to be inspired in the project. And then I realize I'm getting paid the same amount as everybody else. And it's like, you need to talk about that dynamic and realize you're also doing this job of a manager. And I've been running into like conversations recently because my bandmates are wanting to take everything more seriously. And it's fucking awesome. But what they're doing is they're just throwing advice at me to deal with. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I didn't try and react too negatively, but I was just like, I've been doing the best I can while not getting paid for any of this work. If you have these ideas, I'd love for you to help out with me, because I cannot do this thing alone.
And that, there's a point where you got to be like, okay, these things need to happen, but I can only do this much of it. And that's the thing. Yeah, that's where I struggle, because I was like, okay, I can book the shows, I can do the things. But when it came to organizing the album recording, I'm like, I need everyone's input, because all your instruments are different. I don't know fuck all about what all you guys play on the level that you need it to be how you like it or whatever. Like, this is that part of it. I felt, oh, we got to talk together. Or like certain things where you're like, okay, cool, okay, whatever. One person's more on the social media than others. That's usually how it goes with social media, but whatever. But yeah, when it comes to a lot of, that is a shitload of work. And that's a big part of why I didn't rush into starting another project after COVID, because I was like,
takes a while.
And also I was like, I can't do all of that work alone. And not saying that like in other projects, other people did other aspects of things. We all had our things we were good at. But at the same time, like if I'm building a project where like I'm coming to the table asking people to play with me, there's a default expectation that like it's my project, therefore I'm going to take on XYZ. And like,
those expectations need to be addressed.
Yeah.
You need to talk.
That's where I'm like, okay, I gotta. If/when I do another musical project, it'll be group project. That'll be something that gets discussed
and
big time.
And there are like solutions where if I'm the one booking the shows, then I get like a producer cut of the fact that I made the show happen. And there are really realistic ways of doing it. It's really good to get ahead of those conversations rather than after the show has happened, being like, by the way, I'm bringing all this extra money. But that's just like basic, like, group communication and conflict resolution stuff, which that goes for any kind of human dynamic. Mm-hmm. But just like making sure when you're entering a creative project that the creativity gets put first, and that you are supporting a healthy group dynamic, that the creativity does not get hindered from because one person is burning out or there's like these underlying resentments or expectations, because that does inevitably happen when you're like all putting effort into something you all really care about.
That's the thing I got. The end of my last project too, I started to run out of lyrical creativity because not creativity, just that the doubt was creeping in, things were getting in my way because I was just like, I gotta do this, I gotta keep this person that happy, I gotta make this sure this happens.
Yeah, and that's not conducive to your creative energy. No. Yeah, so it's just making sure that there's always room for conversations and making sure that as many of those conversations can happen with everyone there as possible.
Hello, podcasters. We forgot to record an outro because the video crashed on us again, but we want to say thank you for listening to our episode. We hope you learned a little bit and got some, you know, advice, or maybe just were entertained by our nonsense for the last hour. We will be right back in about 2 weeks with our next episode, hopefully sooner if we get around to it. But if you want to be a part of Squish, let us know. And yeah, thank you for listening.
We want to thank everyone who made Squish happen. Specifically, we would love to thank Alana Alstrom and Renata Baldwin for the wonderful background music for our intro and outro, as well as all of our vocal squishers who offered your cute little voices.
So adorable. We love you so much.
I want to thank Katie for editing together our intro and outro soundtrack.
And Tash for doing the video editing and a bunch of great graphic design work.
That's right. We're thanking ourselves because we fucking did this, bitch. Yeah, if you've made it this far, thank you so much for sticking around. And we hope to catch you on the next episode.
Heck yeah. Thanks to everyone for being part of it.
Love you.
Love you.